Hello, guys, and welcome back to the Ridgeway Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Ringenberg. Today, we have Kelly Bessem, a.k.a. Rogue. That's her trail name. Kelly is a field scientist. She gets to backpack out to awesome places to gather data for science-related things. And in the wintertime, she works on backcountry access for human-powered winter sports. I know, both jobs sound awful. I really enjoyed this episode with Kelly, and I hope you guys will too. Thanks again for listening, and here is Kelly Bessem. What's up, Kelly? How's it going?
Hi, Jason. Nice to talk to you.
Very nice to have you on. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, I got some tea. I'm all zenned out. I just did some meditation, so ready to go.
Nice, nice. I got my coffee. Still oh getting wired over here.
What? Okay, big mad headia.
Oh, yeah. Just drinking coffee. Wild, wild child over here. Can you kind of just give the listeners a little insight into like who you are and what you do and how you got to where you are?
Yeah, well, I think the part about getting to where I am is longer, but who I am right now. Yeah, so my name's Kelly, or my trail name is Rogue. I got that from the PCT, and right now I'm a part-time snowboard instructor at Kirkwood, and also just got a part-time job working for a nonprofit, which I'm really excited about, working on like backcountry access for human-powered snow sports, and as well as education. So it's kind of cool. I've mostly worked on like management and data collection related to summertime trails. So I'm excited to work on more of the snow sports side. And then, yeah, in the summers, I'm typically a field scientist backpacking out to collect recreation or water quality data.
That sounds like an epic job. Both of them, actually.
It's definitely a dream job. Yeah, that's at least for me. Not for every, like, you know, some people want to think it's their dream job, you know, backpacking all the time. It has its moments, you know, that are hard. But for me, it is absolutely my dream job.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that's probably a lot of people's dream job. That's so cool that you made that all happen. So when did you first get into being like in the outdoors?
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily grow up in any sort of real outdoor community. So I maybe have some differences there, can relate to some people on that, getting into it later in life. I was always really into nature, though, like, you know, getting my hands in the dirt, playing with bugs, crushing rocks to see just what was inside. I, you know, just wanted to like explore nature as a kid, but that would maybe be in a more urban setting unless we took, you know, a few trips a year going boating or going camping. Which one of those places that we would sometimes go car camping was Yosemite. And so, yeah, what kind of first got me into really living the outdoor lifestyle was when I got a job in Yosemite when I turned 18. And that was kind of by luck or fate almost. I like to think of like how my life may have been different if I didn't get that job. You know, maybe something else would have propelled me into it eventually, but that's what it was. I heard about it from like my mom's coworker whose daughter had applied and wanted a way to move out. You know, living in Southern California, rent was really expensive. So I was kind of stuck at home. So that was like my opportunity to be free. And I remember having this idea moving there. I think I thought I was more so going to be like a ranger. Just because I didn't really have any idea, you know, of really what to expect. And I worked at a front desk housekeeping camp, which was great. And I remember like my second night, I think it was, being taken up in the dark without a headlamp to the couch, which is kind of a notorious hangout spot up a steep bushwhacky hill in Yosemite. And yeah, that was kind of like the start for me, as for I had never, you know, gone off trail and had never really had even an adventure like that, you know, just in that one night. Yeah, that kind of, I mean, I really enjoyed it. And the community there was so much more accepting and just like loving than what I had experienced growing up in Anaheim, where people, I think, kind of, you know, always had their guard up. So yeah, I ended up really embracing it and becoming kind of a full-fledged like hippie and like hiker, and ended up living out of my car for a couple years, just kind of exploring California and the Southwest. And that's when I really got into maps and navigation as well, because back then it wasn't, you weren't just looking at your phone and using Google Maps, you know, you were often using old style flip phones, and you were relying on actual paper maps to figure out where you were going. And so, you know, using that to kind of just be like, oh, this looks cool, and go find out what it was. It was, yeah, it was a really fun time of adventuring, and I guess I'm kind of alluding to skills that I ended up using for, you know, work one day, which is cool. I know it was during that time when I was traveling around. I remember in Bishop specifically one day, just like coming up on all of this trash and, you know, a polluted creek. And I was like, well, what am I doing to help all of these places that I'm really enjoying and going on all of these cool adventures to? And the answer was nothing. So yeah, that led me to dive in deeper and pursue education. I guess just based on the way that I was raised, to me, I was like, okay, I'm going to do, you know, environmental education. So I ended up moving up to Arcata in Humboldt, which will always hold a special place in my heart. Really great outdoor community. Also a really loving community, and also a very active community and sort of like taking a stand and trying to make a difference. So that sort of really got me into feeling comfortable working in nonprofit work. And like I did an internship with the Forest Service there, which was actually really funny. I got to go out with a machete for that job. So I guess that was kind of a taste too of the kind of the ability to kind of have that feeling of adventure even when I was working, and also still be getting to help the places that I loved. Because that one, we were clearing lines to survey a watershed that had been inundated with logs and sediment after a major logging operation up in Humboldt. So we had to go in and just, it felt so wrong at first, but then it was really fun to like cut lines and survey the watershed so that they knew how to properly restore it. So yeah, that was kind of my first taste of really wanting to have a job that was, you know, not just helping the outdoors, but actually being outdoors and getting that, you know, adventure aspect. So yeah, I guess what again like got me more skills as for wanting to backpack for work was doing the PCT when I graduated there. And I will say I'd only backpacked one night by myself, you know, even though I'd done like group backpacking trips, I had only backpacked one night by myself before doing the PCT, which was actually to the top of El Cap. I slept up at the top of El Cap and it was like a full moon. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you know. It's, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Magical. Yeah, but I just had, I realistically was pretty afraid of backpacking by myself. So it was really the PCT that kind of ripped the bandaid off of that one and gave me the confidence to feel comfortable backpacking by myself for work. And not that I always work by myself in my jobs now, but I have and I do. You know, and you still get the people, especially when you're just a gal out there by yourself, being like, you're just like out here. Like, aren't you afraid? And, the thing is that, and I realized this on the PCT after a couple of weeks of being very afraid at first, that, you know, a lot of the stuff that we have in our head is like from media, like TV and stuff or movies. Like when you're actually out there, it feels way safer, you know, at least in my opinion. And I know there are like a few exceptions. As a female, I actually feel way safer out there than I ever would in a city, because it is just quiet.
Yeah, totally
quiet and peaceful. Yeah. You know, and maybe you have had that experience too, where you're like, it's almost like you're like, how is this even real? It's so, you know, like when you're around media so much and there's like all this stuff coming at you, and then you get out there and you're like, it's actually just so still.
Yeah, totally. I know I agree with you that nature feels a lot safer than the city, like for sure. I think the most dangerous part of the world we live in is other humans, like by far, you know?
Right. So, I know, you know, people like to bring stuff out with them to protect themselves, and that's totally fine. But I think in general, yeah, you're going to end up running into less people, and therefore, you know, there's just less. And usually it's like a good community of people, again, except for a few exceptions. So, yeah, then I ended up, I finished the PCT, just stoked on life, but like, didn't know what to do next. I kind of had this idea that while I was hiking the PCT, I would kind of figure out what to do with my life, like after school and everything. And I got to the end of it and I was like, I don't know. Just as, you know, you're like, wow, I have, you know, 2,600 miles to walk and think. And then there's just, you end up being so much in the present moment, which is so great, that you're not necessarily as concerned on like the future. You know, you're thinking about that hour, that day, or maybe the next day. So yeah.
That sounds great.
It is. I think that's something I've realized as like a broader thing too now, is that all of these adventures, like outdoor adventures, really keep you in the present moment. And that's a big part of, I think, why we all like them so much. And then it can sometimes be harder to apply in, like, you know, what a lot of us call quote unquote real life. Yeah. So let's see. So yeah. Oh, then I had a professor message me the day that I finish and be like, you should go get your master's at NAU, Northern Arizona University. And I just like took it as a sign. I was like, you know what? He believes that I can do it. And I still feel like I have so much to learn. And I kind of wanted to do it eventually at some point anyways. So you know what? I'm just going to do it. So I did, and I ended up in a climate science and river studies program, which was both interesting and depressing. And just because of the way they like structured the program, they didn't have that same like activist spirit that I found at Humboldt State and that like drive and hope that I had found there. And so near the end of it, I was just like, where is my hope now? You know, like, so I ended up signing up for a study abroad in New Zealand with another department within the environmental program, and like petition to get it to count for my degree. And I was like, well, at least if I end, you know, with this like study abroad, then I'll come out of this with like, you know, ready to hit the ground running instead of being like, oh my gosh, I need to recover. And it was, you know, again, one of those things where I ended up on a like just way more incredible journey than I could have even wrapped my head around before that. I basically, the program was a 2-month like guided experience with a Maori guide in New Zealand, someone who had actually grown up with his elders and not like entered mainstream society until he was 18, and was just, he just had such a presence and like such wisdom. And he took us around teaching us about Indigenous sovereignty and our relation to the landscape and all of like the stories of the land. And they had just all of these great things going on there. Like the tribes were working with the government in a lot of areas to actually manage the public lands. They started to get to put up like different signs and structures on public lands to actually like show their history and show that they were there. And Yeah, they were just like so, you know, despite all, you know, the history that they went through, they had remained so resilient and had, you know, worked hard to regain their culture, which was just such a beautiful culture. And I was just like, wow, you know, like, if they can do this, and if they have this sort of like love and hope and these great impacts in the environmental world, then like I can make a difference too. So I kind of, yeah, that kind of like got me back on track to keep going after, like, you know, I was kind of just like pummeled with all this like climate change stuff in school. Like, I'm sure other people have had, you know, that moment in time where they're just like, wow, like, where is the hope, you know? It can be pretty daunting sometimes. And so, yeah, I think it's really good, especially the fact that that program was actually going out and experiencing it on the ground instead of just like reading about it. That was really powerful. And that got me into kind of like my work today. And also eventually going back to New Zealand to do the trail that I just did. So it was a pretty big impact on my life. And I think I'd recommend it for anyone, just like as much as it is important to get that, you know, those book smart skills and computer skills, like at a GIS, it's just like when you actually want to like see a change, it's just so helpful to get that on the ground experience and talk to people who have, you know, had those good experiences. So yeah.
Nice. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure like being on the ground and actually like having like so much knowledge and so much like to look around at outdoors probably enriches the experience like quite a bit, you know. It's like when you start learning like what the flowers are and like how they change and what blooms when and, you know, what bugs come out and stuff, you know, just like having that like scientific background of like knowing more than like an average hiker is probably really cool. I kind of wish I had like a little bit more knowledge than I do, but yeah, that's cool.
Well, there's always so much to know. But that's, yeah, I mean, that's what's kind of cool about it too. But yeah, I think that's, you know, of course not something, and it's starting to slowly come more into the mainstream, but I think, you know, for a long time it was just like hitting the books, hard science, and not necessarily allowing for those like actual connections that were recognized as like the way to do things. So yeah, just like getting to, yeah, I think actually just physically experience nature and kind of like more traditional, you know, ecological knowledge is kind of that balance that we need, so that we're not just making decisions based on numbers. And I, you know, that still happens a lot in like public agencies I've worked for, but they're trying slowly, you know, to like integrate other perspectives as well, but it's a slow process.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think the outdoors in general is just getting a lot more popular. I don't know what it is. Maybe people just want to be away from their phones now or something, you know?
Yeah. You know, I mean, at least I know a lot of places, and I know here in Tahoe, COVID kind of triggered it a little bit. And then I think in a weird way, like, social media also did, you know, because everyone was now seeing all of these people go on adventures and stuff instead of it being more like a fringe thing and in the background and kind of like separate from, you know, city life or whatever. So I think between those two things, like, yeah, I know it's kind of increased everywhere, especially in the mountains. So.
Yeah, and I think climbing gyms probably have a little bit to do with that as well, you know, because like there's a climbing gym in like every city now, and logically after you get good at like indoor climbing, you want to go outside. People go through the gym and then get into the outdoors, I think, a little bit more than they used to, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, no, there's a lot more access nowadays. I know. In the past, and actually I just watched like a film festival thing where they mentioned this, so it's on my mind. But in the past, you really did kind of have to either, I guess, learn by trial and error, which I did a little bit of, or have like a mentor, which I also relied on at different points where you can go out with them and pick their brain and everything. But you know, now there's different access points, like maybe climbing gyms where you can easily interact with people, you know, instead of having to like move to Yosemite or something and find these people. So yeah, it has become a little bit more open to everyone, though a point that got brought up in this film is that like kind of like what are you losing with that as well? When people feel like they can, I guess, you know, just like look stuff up online or just like go to a climbing gym and then just kind of like jump outside instead of like having that same like need to seek out different people in, you know, sort of like masters of the craft. I see the benefit of it. You know, maybe it would have helped me to get into certain things like snowboarding sooner. Just the fact that like they have better ways of teaching new people and like better gear and everything like that nowadays. I remember my first year living in Tahoe way back when I was like 19. I lived here for like a year. I remember being pretty new to snowboarding, not really know what I was doing, and going to one of the resorts and just like these guys just like yelling at me to get off the mountain.
So mean.
Yeah, so I was just like so. There was, you know, I guess maybe this is in other things like climbing and surfer culture and all that stuff where it's kind of like, this is my turf. And I feel like that is definitely slowly changing a little bit to kind of include more people. But yeah, again, just with that, you know, we have to figure out a way. Because, you know, before when it was on the fringes, There was enough mentors to bring people in. Now, when you have like so many more people coming into outdoor spaces, it's like, how do you get them all the knowledge that they need, you know? So that is sort of an interesting question at this point of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately why I started guiding, rock climbing, canyoneering and stuff. Yeah, mostly just to show people the right way the first time, instead of, you know, somebody like going out with a buddy that like may or may not know what they're doing and, you know, causing a scene or you know, even worse, like injuring themselves, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, yeah, that is great. Great work too. I have so much respect for guides. Even though
yeah.
I did a tiny bit of it in Yosemite at one point. And you're just like so on all the time. But it is like so important to have people willing to do that.
Yeah.
Whether it's for a job or not.
It's definitely stressful, you know. Because you're teaching people how to do it the right way, but also when people start belaying, you know, by themselves at first, it's scary, you know, because like they may not know exactly like how it works at first, and you right. gotta, you know, don't let go of that rope. Like, I know you're gonna like your reflexes are gonna want you to, but don't do it. Like, it can be really stressful. Especially like, I don't know, I taught a lot of children as well, like 7 to 11 year olds, and you know, we'd have them belaying each other and stuff. By the end of it, of course, we're like using gree-grees and whatnot, but I mean, they come out of the classes like knowing how to belay each other and stuff, like at like a young age, which is pretty cool.
It's so cool. Yeah, to be able to give them like that feeling of independence and confidence like that.
Yeah, and kids love swinging around on ropes, you know.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I know when I was a kid, I would just climb around on trees, you know, but that instinct is there in kids for sure.
Yeah. but back to like when I first started climbing, I was fortunate enough to actually have like really good mentors. But like when I first got into the outdoors, I was probably like 18 or 19 when I like really, really got like super, super into it. And I didn't even know that rock climbing was really a sport at that time. So it was like, this is kind of weird. Like I hadn't even met a rock climber until like I got into like the wilderness program at LTCC when I was like 20.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's always so interesting how, like, when you look back and, like, how, I don't know, you're just, like, in a totally different sphere, and it just, like, you had no idea, and now you're, like, an expert.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
crazy how that works, and I think it's also, like, really encouraging, especially when you're, like, trying to tackle something new, that you're, like, you know, I mean, this is like super cliche, but like everyone starts out somewhere sort of thing, you know, and you have to like trust that you're going to get there as long as you keep working at it.
Yeah. And I mean, I dedicated my life to the outdoors for, I don't know, like 10 years now,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, mostly like climbing and snowboarding, but you know, I moved into a van and lived out of a van.
Yeah.
Various places for 10 years, you know, climbing every day and something outdoors every day. So yeah, no, it is, it's crazy like when you first start, you like see all these people that you're like now in classes with or like associating with, and like you, and then you're like, you did what in your life? Like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
and then eventually you're like doing the same things and you're like, oh, it's kind of a logical path, just, you know, meet people that are doing cool things, move into van, camp with them every day, learn a bunch of cool stuff, meet a bunch of cool people. Yeah. 20s were fun.
It's true. That, yeah. That was definitely a big part of my journey. And I think, you know, like for me, though, it was really just, I did live out of a van for a short stint. It was not a fancy van, like all over Instagram nowadays. But I mean, really, initially, I was just living out of like a little 4-door car and living out of a tent. Like, there was no sort of like correct way to do it. At least I thought when I was like getting into it, there wasn't like, oh, you have to have a van that looks like this and have all of these things. It was just like, I don't know, figure it out. So that was kind of my journey with it, to just, I don't know, there really wasn't much expectation. But I do know that as I've gotten older, I have wanted maybe a little bit more comfort and expectation in what I, rather than just living out of a four-door car. So I know Tahoe has been a good place for that. It's a good little home base. But I do also enjoy, kind of like being able to like teach and pass things on, because, you know, you remember being there and not really, you know, knowing what the heck to do. So I get to do a little bit of that with hiking from time to time with work, but like, I guess mostly with snowboarding and sharking at Kirkwood. And I especially love teaching the kiddos and other women who come in just like, you know, not thinking that they can, you know, they're just expecting to like be able to get down a run, and then you, you know, get them way further than they thought that they could even ever get to. And that's like, to me, super rewarding.
Yeah. And they're going to remember you like for the rest of the time they do the sport. You know, that's like a big part of it too, is like, you know, you always remember mentors and teachers that like left an impact on your life. So it's pretty cool.
For me with snowboarding, I mean, I've had like plenty of other people that I could name, but for me with snowboarding specifically, there was this old lady, Christine. Oh my gosh, I don't even want to call her an old lady. This like very wise lady, I'll just say that. she was in her, well into her 60s. And had, you know, grown up skiing, and then because of her sons decided to just snowboard from there on out. And she was kind of the one who taught me at Mount Rose, because they used to have these like women's Thursdays if you had a pass, where you could get a full day lesson for free. And yeah, she was just like such an inspiration. I was like, I want to be you when I'm, you know, your age. Like, and people would come around when we were, you know, going through stuff and be like, I'm out here because of you, Christine. And so, yeah, I will definitely always remember her. And I hope I get to see her again at some point. I don't know if I ever will, but yeah, that was a really awesome experience. And I definitely hope I can be inspiring like that for others at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. See, even you like can tell a story about that. You know, I have so many outdoor mentors that like, I can't even count how many people showed me things and like, and
And sometimes it's just little pieces, you know, even people you meet more in passing, but it like slowly, you know, helps build you up and is like, you know, a part of who you are. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah. But I would definitely say, you know, and like a lot of the work that I do, these sort of like dream jobs, I think people are like, oh, well, there's not that many. I could never get one. And I guess for me, that was never really a possibility. I was like, I am getting one. Like, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. Well, and that was like kind of part of me wanting a master's too, is I kind of just wanted to be so qualified that it was just like, okay, if I really want this job, I am going to get it. Because I just, yeah, if I set my mind on like a certain job or something, I'm just like, yeah, I just have to get it. So that did help, even though graduate school is pretty painful. I would say it was worth it in the end. But yeah, and also just like, I guess just getting to be part of a community, whether it's like you're recreating outside with people or you're volunteering or whatever. I would definitely say that, you know, as I've gotten more into it, having those connections is super helpful. Because people are like, oh, you've like, you know, worked with this person or whatever, like, and they have good things to say about you. Like, we know that you're going to be like a reliable person for the job. So that's a big thing as well. But yeah, I mean, you just got to go for it. I know I was like, yeah, I mean, it's easy to have imposter syndrome for sure. Like when I got out of grad school, I got a job backpacking to high elevation lakes in Sequoia and Kings Canyon to do frog surveys and collect water samples. So they were looking at the change in the water chemistry actually from the pollution in the Central Valley raining down into these high elevation lakes at like, you know, 12,000 feet in the High Sierra, which is just wild, and it shows how connected the water cycle is. I definitely think it's interesting. Yeah, just water is a cool example in general of how connected everything is, and I'm sort of a water nerd. But yeah, I just was like, yeah, blown away that I got the job. And it was like, I don't know, I was like, this is a culmination of everything that I've like worked towards as for like furthering my navigation skills and my hiking skills, my, you know, scientific skills. So I think it's really cool when you like have all these kind of smaller goals that end up coming into one big goal. And yeah, I guess for me, that ended up being with work, which is helpful. Not that these jobs necessarily make you rich, which is not what I got into it for. But when I think, yeah, it's really cool when you can just like draw on all of these different life experiences and then use it to, you know, contribute to the greater good. Yeah, it's definitely fulfilling.
Yeah, that sounds really rewarding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely getting paid more in like sunrises and epic mountain views than the monetary thing. But.
Exactly. And, you know, it also just, I found, because, you know, there's plenty of people in the environmental field who make such a big difference who are like often behind a desk, and like that's so important too. And I do that sometimes. I've just found like for me personally, I realized while I was in college and was kind of like coming to terms with how bad my ADHD was, and I know that's like a common college thing, but I had actually been diagnosed when I was 2, but had never like really understood what to do about it or what it meant. And so for me, doing like an active job, and that could be, you know, maybe for someone that's like electrical, you know, whatever, just being able to do something hands-on, like for me, made a lot of my issues kind of a lot more manageable. So yeah, you kind of have to play into, I think, just what works best for you as a person too, instead of trying to force it. Like if I tried to be someone who was making maps all day, because I love to make maps, if I tried to do that for a job every single day, it wouldn't work, you know? It just, yeah. So you gotta do what fits you.
Yeah, I feel the same. I do not do well with jobs that either aren't like outdoors or like aren't really engaging. I would get fired or quit so easily if like I was doing something I didn't like, because I just can't pay attention to it at all. Like I just don't care, you know?
Right. So yeah, I mean,
can't force it.
You know, again, it's kind of a cliche, but like, yeah, I guess go after what you're passionate about. which actually reminds me of a really cool, it was in one of those kayaking documentaries actually that I saw one time, but he was talking about how he used kayaking to, like, you know, teach kids and empower people, teach them about environmental issues. And in that way, you know, he was helping to create a better environment. So, you know, he was like, just take what you're passionate about and then figure out how to, like, make it work for the greater good. You don't have to try to pretend you're something that you're not, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, you're definitely going to live a happier life if you just pursue the things you want to pursue rather than trying to go the path of, like, more money or something that doesn't really bring you joy. Because, I mean, who cares how much money you have if you're miserable, you know?
Totally, totally. Although I will say, as I've gotten older, I've started to, like, kind of stand up for myself and ask for more when I can. You know, when I was younger, I'd be like, I don't care what I get paid. I don't care. I just want to be outside. And, you know, I'm also like, well, I've put a lot of time and energy and, like, thought into all of this. And I, you know, I know I'm, like, a qualified person. And so maybe I'm going to ask for a little bit more or, you know, push for them to maybe promote me or something. So I think that's something to, to not feel bad about doing, even if you're in a sphere where you're, you know, kind of more of like a public servant. I think you also have to have that balance of thinking about yourself too.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be able to pay the bills somehow, you know?
Yeah, and realistically, yeah, you know, you can help more people if you're not stressed out yourself. So
yeah, totally. Hopefully they give us more funding for outdoor stuff, but not holding my breath.
You know, it comes and goes. It goes in waves. I feel like right now there's been a lot more opportunity and funding from what I've seen. Whereas, like, when I got out of my bachelor's degree, there was a much different political climate and it felt like there was no funding for anything. So, you know, you have to remember that it comes and goes, and there's going to be the times where there's more opportunity to seize.
Yeah, definitely. So, do you want to talk about your hike that you just did?
Yes, we can sort of I guess best for last. I just did the Te Araroa Trail, which means the long path in Maori. And first of all, I would definitely call it a route rather than a trail. You know, things that I've experienced, like doing the Oregon Coast Trail, are parts of the Heyduk, these kind of more adventurous routes, I would say, rather than trails, are kind of how I would describe the experience. You know, you're like walking through rivers or doing a lot of river crossings. I definitely pulled a few bouldering moves with my pack on. And nice. Yeah, like was pulling myself up with roots, tree roots at different points because it was so steep. just like really wild weather patterns in New Zealand, and yeah, just like not as stable. I'm used to hiking on a lot of granite, and this was like, you know, kind of decomposing hillside. So it was, and very, you know, lots of mud too, which I actually kind of like. It just takes a long time to hike through. yeah, so it's a full adventure. It's also, I would say, more of a journey in that you can't really put the same like boundaries on it as something like, you know, the PCT or AC or AT that have been established for a long time. You kind of just have to go with the flow, which was a little bit difficult for me because I was on a time frame. I had a month and a half before I wanted to come back, and then, you know, I was going to be going back to work. So yeah, I, you know, in an ideal world, I would have had a longer time, especially since there's just, yeah, there's so much to see in New Zealand. It's just such a beautiful country, and there's so many great people. And, you know, it worked out okay because I had already had this cool experience and opportunity to dive into Maori culture and learn about this like rich history. And so I had a really good background going into it. Otherwise, this would have been like way too fast. So yeah, if you're thinking about doing it, definitely plan to allow more time than even you initially think, just because of all of the factors that go into it, whether you end up hiking a section pretty much off trail or weather comes in, you know, and you have to wait for the water to go down. But yeah, it was, I think what ended up being the main takeaway for me from doing this trail, it's actually kind of funny. Somebody who gave me a ride when I was hitchhiking one of the times was like, "Oh, are you out here to find yourself?" And I was like, "Well, I've already found myself multiple times. I just keep losing it, you know."
Nice.
You're kind of like, I think, always evolving and processing and going through different things. And at least for me, through hiking and doing long distance hiking is kind of how I best process everything that's, you know, been emotional or in my brain or whatever. I just like can actually really get out there and process it. I mean, at least for me, I grew up in a household where we didn't really show emotion, and I've been working on that for a long time. But realistically for me, yeah, just like getting out there and pushing myself and kind of getting also in that like meditative state, just like, you know, that in that rhythm of hiking, that's what really lets me process things. But yeah, for me, the main takeaway that I had was the only way out is through. And yeah, I mean, there were some sections on the trail, like, oh my gosh, like the hardest day I had on the trail, where I just had to keep telling myself that. I was like, look, you just gotta get past this part, and then, like, it's, you know, you're gonna get to an easier part again, and you're gonna look back on it and be really proud of yourself. Really, you know, even like out loud, I would have to like tell myself, like, you got this, you just gotta get through it. And like looking back afterwards, I was like, well, that's kind of exactly what I needed for like quote unquote real life as well. Just like this past year and a half, really going through it, like going through injuries after like my car accident. I had a big car accident, and like losing the ability to backpack and hike, and not knowing if I could do it again. And, you know, just having really low days where I like was in so much pain physically that I couldn't even get out of bed, and just having to like wake up every day, you know, and just keep going, show up to PT, take care of myself, and just like trust, even though like everything in that present moment was like seeming like I would never get through it and it would just go on forever, just like trusting I will get through this and there's like a light at the end of the tunnel that I will see soon. And so, yeah, to me, that was kind of like this trail.
Wow, that's awesome. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And I mean, like, one of the main reasons I decided to do this trail, because I had wanted to do it after my study abroad, regardless. But I kind of just wanted to know and trust that I could still do it. And yeah, kind of just like that materialized on the day to day with, you know, it was kind of like more than I had signed myself up for. It was like, I knew it was going to be a harder trail, but it was just so much more adventurous than I thought. And so like in these moments where I was doing like there was one part where I did, it was literally like 100 river crossings and like bushwhacking through thorns and just like, you know, nobody else out there and me just being like, what? It like, is it gonna end? You know, just being like, yeah. And like looking back on all of those parts of the trail that were really hard, like, I definitely don't regret doing them. They're really cool. It was just definitely like type two and maybe even type three fun. And
yeah. You're like, why am I out here? What am I doing? Yeah. And then you're like, that was actually kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. It was good to look back on. But even like a few days later, I was still like, what the heck was I doing? So yeah, it's a, I think if you ask anyone else who's done that trail, they would probably have like a similar experience. And maybe a little bit less. So, like I was there really early season when, you know, the water was still high. I got snowed on a couple times. Like there were like record-breaking winds. It was, you know, it was like a lot more intense maybe than like middle of summer when everyone else is out there, you know, as the trail gets more popular. Like I went without seeing another human for the longest ever. I didn't see another person at all for 4 days, which was interesting. And I think for me, what made it so okay is I think usually I get weirded out being alone for that long, just because of like all the predators here. You know, I like it starts to creep into my mind when I have like too much time to think about it. And what's interesting is like for me that'll reset even if I like talk to someone for a minute on the trail and then like, okay, bye. You know, but just, I don't know. There's just something about that human interaction that like gives me comfort, even though I like being alone. So yeah, I know by the end of those 4 days, I was just like singing to myself.
That's funny. You're like, I'm isolated in the woods, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. You literally just start singing about like what's around you and what you're seeing, describing your journey. Yeah, no, it's great though. I wish that would come out of me more often because it was very natural. It just like all of a sudden I was just singing for hours. Yeah, so yeah, I think like that's another cool part of through hiking too, especially if you're in more remote scenarios like that, is like you really just get to see exactly who you are when nobody else is around. You know, like there's really no denying it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're like oh, there's nobody out here, I can do whatever I want. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think like when you're not out by yourself for all that long, your mind just automatically acts the way that you usually do. And I think, you know, for everyone it's different, but usually, at least for me, like past a certain amount of time, I think for me, it's a couple days. it like that just like turns off and like my filter for society is just like gone.
Yes.
Just like, yeah.
Bring out the wild side.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But I know I've been talking for a while. Is there anything specific that you wanted me to talk about the trail?
You kind of just keep answering the questions before I ask them, which is which is great. How long was Fair the trail? Enough. I don't know if we...
Yeah, so let's see. I think it's 1,300 kilometers, about 800 miles. And so I hiked 600 of it and then biked the rest, which is not uncommon for the Tia Rodoa, especially since there are still sections where there isn't a trail. It's just road walking. And I know there's through hikes here where, you know, you have to hike the road to have like officially done it. But again, it's like kind of viewed as more of a journey there. And so, yeah, it's just kind of a normal thing to do that. And it was really pleasant and like a nice change of pace, you know, to get to see those sections. And also really helped me out because, again, I was like on a super tight time frame. Like I did the whole thing in 39 days. Which I would probably recommend 2 months. So it was pretty quick.
Yeah, you just like monstered through that, huh?
Yep. Again, out of necessity, like I remember I think it was like my third or fourth day, I met one other guy doing it. You know, I didn't pass all that many people doing it the whole time I was there. Cause again, just super early season. And yeah, it was a guy from France and he was talking to me about the section after that, which was the Richmond Ranges, which is notoriously the hardest part of the trail, which is accurate. and he's like, how long are you planning on taking to go through there? And I said, 6 days. And he's like, what? He's like, most people do it in 9 or longer. And, you know, here I am all confident in myself, which I definitely got a little bit shut down but by the Richmond Ranges. But, yeah, I was like, oh, no, like, I'm going to do it in 6 days. He's like, okay, well, I will go with you. And I'm like, no, like you don't, like, the only reason I'm hiking this pace is because I have limited time. You know, stop and slow the roads a little bit. And I mean, I do like pushing myself and doing really high miles and like seeing how far I could go. But I also do see like how important it is, especially if it's your first time to New Zealand, to like have that time to actually even be able to like talk to people and like experience what's there. And I think a big part of that when you through hike is being able to talk to people, whether it's, you know, hitchhiking or in towns or whatever. So yeah.
Yeah.
It was definitely fast. And after the first day of trying to hike with me, he stopped.
He's like, no, too fast, I gotta go.
He's like, yeah, I think I'm gonna stay here. It's like, yeah, I get it, I hurt, I'm in pain right now too. But yeah, the Richmond Rangers are crazy. That's where the record breaking wins were. So yeah, at one point when unfortunately I was up on the ridge, because a lot of it is up on the ridge, it was like 200 kilometers per hour.
Oh god.
Winds, and like so foggy that you couldn't see the trail markers anymore. So I had hunkered down for a day because it was just like absolutely dumping rain and crazy wind, like unsafe conditions to go on. Thank goodness for the huts that they have there, honestly. Like for some of the weather events that they get, they're like really, really helpful. I would have been quite soaked, you know, even probably in a good tent. Yeah, so it ended up taking me 3 hours to go 3 kilometers when I tried to continue.
Oh, God.
I was, like, hiding in little clusters of trees until I'd get, like, little gaps in the fog that weren't quite so windy, and then, like, kind of run to the next bunch of trees because it was just, like, so intense. And you know, luckily that part wasn't as exposed as some of the other parts where like you like can't, you know, it's a no fall zone. But you know, at a certain point the winds were just getting worse and worse. I ended up going like an alternative way, and so I think that's like something too with this trail, is it's like, it's a trail that you like really have to have respect for and be humbled by and like know when to call it or, you know, just be prepared to hunker down in a hut for multiple days possibly, which I just didn't have time for. You know, I was like, okay, I have to figure out a way to keep going if I'm going to finish this. So that time I ended up finding this crazy alternate down from the mountains and around and like into this place in the middle of absolute middle of nowhere. There was like 2 farms and then it was like absolutely nothing for like a half an hour drive. So I was like, well, I'm going to be, you know, walking myself into town, you know, I'm not going to be passing anyone. And eventually I got there and it was like almost dark, and I like stopped just to eat a snack before trying to figure out where to camp, because again, like it was mostly private land and I didn't want to trespass. And then right then this farmer pulls up in his little ATV and he's like, did you just get here? And I was like, yeah. He's like, I just had all of my bowls out like 5 minutes ago. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah, so that's actually like, they don't have any predators and stuff in New Zealand, but the most dangerous thing actually can be like the farm animals.
That would be so disappointing if you like got murdered by a bull like, while hiking.
Yeah, it would be pretty random. But it was just like, I don't know. I feel like you also have moments on through hikes where it just ends up being perfect timing. You know, like I had just, you know, I had stopped enough, taken just enough time to where I missed out on that, you know, lovely experience. and then he was like, oh, well, like, where are you trying to go? And immediately I, you know, hopped in with him and his cute farm dog, and like he drove me over to where his home was. And yeah, then his wife, like, she's like, well, you can stay with us, but then like you're probably not gonna be able to get to town. She's like, so I can just bring you to town. I was like, yes. Yes, please.
Yes,
like,
please, I don't have to walk anymore.
What? Like, just like, you know, like crazy timing of the universe. I was like, how did I even get this ride right now? I don't even understand. But like, yeah, just, you know, that sort of like crazy timing working out and people being so nice is just, yeah, another great part of through hiking. Yeah.
Yeah, it just goes to show there's mostly nice people in the world. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. And that's another one of those things where you just have to get out and experience it, because all of the, you know, TV shows and news are like, everyone's bad, everyone's crazy, everyone's trying to kill you. And it's like when you actually get out there, you're like, oh, like people are so nice.
Yeah, most people are very nice.
Yeah, it's encouraging. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of the ones that aren't nice are provoked. You know, I don't think there's a lot of people that are out there like looking to harm random people, you know.
It's a very small percentage, and realistically, that's why it, like, makes the news, you know?
Yeah, totally. Cool, we're at about an hour and 8 minutes. Do you want to keep talking?
Do you have anything else specific you wanted to ask me, or, like,
not particularly. I think we covered a lot, you know?
Yeah, I think, yeah, when I get talking about the stuff that I'm really passionate about, I can kind of go on for a while.
I mean, yeah, me too. You know, especially when it's, you know, something like you're super, super passionate about, you know.
Yeah, which is all of the things that we talked about today.
Yeah, I know. It's so nice when you have like a passion in life, you know, you have like something that you're super, super stoked about all the time, and you're like, yes, love it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. That was a good episode. I loved it.
Awesome. Yeah, I hope somebody can get something cool out of it.
Cool. Do you want to tell people where to find you?
Yeah, if you would like, I'm mostly just on Instagram, and that's Rogue, and that's Rogue, not Rouge. A lot of people text me, hi, Rouge. so it's Rogue Roamings, on Instagram, and I got some photos of the trail up if you're thinking about doing the Teotihuacan. I'm also trying to put together all of my video clips just because it captures it a lot better, I think. But that's still a work in progress.
Nice, nice. Cool. Well, thanks, Kelly. That was awesome.
Yeah, always nice talking, Jason.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.